Chapter 12. The bells kept her awake. If you'd lived there for some time, maybe all your life, you would get acclimatized. But not if you'd arrived in the late afternoon of a winter's day after a long rail journey followed by a bit of uncomfortable tailing. The lakeside town of Brissago has one hotel, standing almost on the lake, with a church set just above it, giving guests an unenviable proximity to the bells that toll each half hour. In bed, Bex became convinced that the bells were tolling just for her. This was the main reason for her nocturnal telephone search. She'd already called London with a quick situation report, four lines of text that could be fed into the magic machines to give her exact location, and an outline of the facts as she saw them. She expected a reply within hours. In fact, it was pretty well essential they got back to her soon. She did not fancy operating in either Switzerland or Italy without some kind of sanction, particularly from the Swiss, who were known to be a shade touchy when it came to another country's law enforcement agencies taking liberties in their backyard. This status would only be further compounded by the presence of someone from Belfast in the frame, for Tessa Murray's name would now be posted on many search lists. Even in these times when a permanent ceasefire had been achieved, the Irish were more than a mite touchy over security. And who can blame them? London now knew that Bex had not only Tessa in her sights, but also someone, presumed to be Alchemist, within touching distance. So, Rebecca Louise Oleska, or Gauntlet, depending on where you stood, had every reason to expect reinforcements, an arrangement with the Swiss Security Service, and, most probable of all, instructions to back off in favour of some kind of specialist team. Maybe she would have to go via Belfast so that grimy Liz Lydiard could do a short debrief. Whatever, it was reasonable to assume that she would be ordered back, PDQ, before she got trashed. She was not naive enough to imagine that she'd arrived in the town without being detected by Alchemist. They had, in fact, locked eyes. Also, she figured, rightly as it turned out, that London would take immediate steps. What she neglected to see was the time lag before the senior officers of OS-13 would snap into action. So, in the dark, slow waiting time of night, Bex kept the demons at bay by allowing herself to be filled with curiosity about her husband and his reasons for being in Scotland. In many ways, it was the thought of her imminent return that prompted this nudge in Charlie's direction. In short, she really wanted him there, in Dolphin Square, when she got back, not swanning around, roaming in the gloaming, or knee-deep in heather and haggis. Yet when she did track him down, with the help of a trusty diary that contained several flimsy pages of hotel numbers, she found he was out. "This time of night?" she queried. "Beware the green-eyed monster, Bex." Outside, in front of the hotel, with the church looming above it, there is a short paved area leading down to the water. So close is it that on a clear, calm day, the church is reflected in the lake, and the ferry stage is a grey finger of planked wood cutting into the green glass water. When the steamer is in, you embark and disembark by passing under a metal arch proclaiming the town's name, and you walk over the creaking wood almost straight into the hotel. In summer, you sit outside, eat, drink, and watch the ferryboats as they chug, crisscrossing the lake to Italy and back. If you do that, there are other delights, for across the lake the huge breast of mountain rises, green and cow-dotted in summer, white, running down to green in winter. And as the year progresses, it provides a constant light show on its meadows and rocks, as the sun shifts from dawn through its phases, until the shadows chill the day and the view at dusk is an altered state. Here, though, when winter has yet to sniff the first hint of spring, there is a bleakness, for the place is not whole out of summer. So it was around 4 that afternoon that Bex had boarded the ferry in Locarno, and as soon as the ship slipped her moorings and began to make way briskly out onto the lake, Bex hefted her garment bag and made for the nearest washroom. She emerged as they were turning towards Ascona, the new raincoat reversed and belted over her thicker jeans, and the wasted, slightly flared black jacket she'd bought in Belfast. Since leaving Ireland, she'd worn soft, low-heeled shoes for comfort. Now, wanting to gain a little height, she changed into sleek blue pumps with taller heels. She'd bought those in Belfast also, on her little shopping spree, and she knew Charlie was going to label them her fuck-me shoes. She smiled to herself as she crammed down the darker of the two felt hats, and, with the heavy horn-rimmed spectacles on her nose, returned to her spot forward, looking like a very different girl to the one who'd come up the gangway in Locarno. Glancing into the forward saloon, she had a clear view of Tessa seated near the big sliding doors. Saw how she sat and remembered it, how the woman seemed to put all her weight onto her left buttock, back straight, but her chin tilted arrogantly. They stopped at Ascona, two people off, three on. Then the steamer began its shore-hugging approach to Brissago, and she saw the Murray girl stand up, wrap her heavy coat around her, and make her way over the gently rocking deck to the starboard side, where she joined a knot of passengers by the rail, close to where the gangway would be slid out. The engines died to idle, and they moved softly up to the landing stage, bumping the heavy buffer tires lashed to the woodwork. Bex sidled aft, moving along the windows of the lounge, and cutting across to the starboard side, just as the first passengers began to make their way down the little ridged gangplank. She hung back at the tail end of the dozen or so people in front of her, and made heavy weather out of carrying the bag. Tessa was well ahead of her, a hand brushing hair from her face, and her steps high and sexy, her legs taking wide paces, as she strode off to the left of the hotel, toward the main road. Bex caught sight of her turning, again to the left, as Tessa reached the top of the slight incline up onto the road. She was heading toward Italy. Bex dared not risk leaving her garment bag at a hotel, for she wouldn't need it if Tessa led her over the frontier. How the hell did you follow someone along a main highway carrying a case? She slid the strap over her shoulder, shrugged, and stepped onto the gangway. The last passenger to leave the steamer, shoulders squared, and her own prancing walk, her seven-league boots stride, as she called it, trying to shorten the space between her and the target. The blue shoes did not help. Only one main road travels through the town of Brissago, and Tessa Murray was still visible, moving fast, as though she had no cares in the world. The road hugs the sweep of the shoreline, passing a scatter of villas as it goes on above the Lido, then past the tobacco factory on the right, before it crosses a small border post into Italy. She walks like a bloody giraffe, Bex thought. Those long, high paces, almost kicking from the knee. Certainly she was off in a world of her own, not even a glance backward, as she seemed to quicken the walk, as if she were late for an appointment. She gestured, looking at her left wrist, and Bex wondered if she actually was late for a meeting. Then Tess slowed as she approached the villa on the left. More cypress trees, terracotta roof tiles, a low wall and a wrought iron gate. Bex, almost 20 yards behind her, could see the front door, heard it as it scraped open. Bex stopped, bent, and pretended she had a problem with her shoe, squinting up as the man came out of the front door into the dusk, reaching out as Tess closed the gate, and dropped her bag as he appeared, wrapping his arms around her. Pulling her to him, one arm sliding around her waist in an acquisitive movement that left nothing to the imagination. You saw it and knew, immediately, how these two people would be spending their evening. He kissed her, hugged her close, but his head came round over her shoulder, eyes raking the road, as a Fiat bustled along noisily from the direction of Italy, followed by a little truck with three workmen, Chilly in the back, cat-calling and whistling, laddism on wheels. Bex sensed the man's eyes on her, trying to gauge the threat. Then she saw him turn away, an arm flung around Tessa's shoulders, his other hand going for her case, and ushering her through the front door. Bex straightened up and started to walk on, telling herself to look purposeful. 5 yards now from the low wall and metal fence, a boundary marker enclosing the property.